Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Wednesday, December 11th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have two fantastic panelists. I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
I'm glad you're with me today. And we're going to talk to you a little bit later about something near and dear to your heart. Spoiler alert, kids. Also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here.
Glad to have you with me. Now, Andrew, I want to start with you. We had an iOS update yesterday, which is good news. Generally, it's nice to have those things come out because they do fix some stuff. They make things a little bit better in some cases, like giving you a switch to turn off the Memoji stickers that you never use. If you're that person who never ever sends anybody a Memoji sticker ever, you can not have to see those anymore. But sometimes, you know, for that steps forward, you sometimes get a step backward. Right, Andrew?
Yeah, so it was iOS 13.3, so definitely download it. Yeah, so you can finally remove Memoji stickers from the keyboard if you don't use that feature. So basically, you just go to Settings and then tap General, Keyboard, and then scroll down to the bottom. There's a new toggle for Memoji stickers, so just switch that off if you don't use them.
Excellent. So, like I said, there's good news, but sometimes there's not so good news.
Yes, so another feature I noticed is iOS tries to be a little bit better at detecting junk messages, and it does something new. So if you get a message that it thinks is junk, you won't be able to see the message. When you tap on it, you'll see the screen that says restricted contact, and you can either tap the OK button, or if you actually want to see the message, you can tap add contact.
Okay.
Now, I saw that message last night because I was trying to log into my bank, and I have two-factor authentication set up. Mm-hmm. So when they texted me the code, it gave me that restricted contact screen, and I couldn't actually see the code until I added that number to my list.
So even if you tap OK, you still can't see the message.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like, okay, I know this is happening, and then it just takes you back to the message screen.
Wait a minute. After you add it to your contacts, then you can see the code?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Okay.
So, and this is because, like, you don't know where that message is necessarily coming from. And with some services, it comes from a different... It usually, like, mine always come from, like, a 5 or 6-digit number. It's not, like, a phone number, like a 7-digit or a 10-digit number, like you would expect a phone number to be. It's usually, like I said, like 5 or 6 numbers. And sometimes it's different every time, and sometimes it's, you know, the same one. If you use a service and you log in multiple places, sometimes you get 3 or 4 of those over time. So you don't know necessarily where that's coming from to add that contact in the first place.
Yeah, so basically I added the number, I got the code, but then I deleted the contact. Now, when I tried it again today, even though it was deleted, fortunately, I was able to see that code right away. So apparently the system does learn. And by the way, it did come from the same, I think they call that a short code, that it was yesterday.
Okay.
But if you do have a service that uses maybe a different one each time, I'm afraid that you'll have to add it to your contact each time, which is, you know, obviously very annoying.
Yeah, especially because you have to go through that for everything. And then if, especially if it's a one-time use thing, having to go back and delete it is a nightmare. That would be terrible.
Yeah.
I can see that being really awful.
And unlike Memoji stickers, I haven't been able to find a setting for this. So I think this is just part of the system intelligence.
Yeah. Now, my question, and this is the thing I'm going to have to go and test. And listeners, if this is a thing that you've bumped up against and you have actual experience in this, please let us know. Observations@MacObserver.com. What I want to know is, with iOS 12, we got the convenience feature. This is a very Apple feature where when you get one of those codes, if you're like on a page where you have to log in and then it takes you to the second page and says, enter the code that we just texted you, it will show up in the top row, like where the predictive text would be. It'll show there and it'll be like from 12345 and it'll be whatever that that code is that you're supposed to enter into the page. And it, if you just tap on that, it fills it in for you on the web page or in the app or whatever.
Fill.
What?
Yeah.
Secure code autofill.
Yes. And what I'm curious about is how the we don't want you to get spam texts feature that Andrew is describing possibly conflicts with secure code autofill. So I'm curious about that because I haven't tried it yet. So I don't know if I'm going to run into trouble with that or not. So,
yeah, I'll have to test this too, because my bank app uses its own keyboard and not the system one. So I don't get that predictive bar at the top where that code shows up.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to do some more digging.
Yeah, I'll have to try like I have something. Maybe it's Google's two-factor. I have something that sends me a text and doesn't use like an authentication app. I have something that does, and I'll figure out what that is, and I'll see if I can try it out. But in the meantime, this know that this is something to be aware of. I want it to be a good thing, but right now it sounds like there might be a little higher hassle factor than the good that it's doing by trying to protect you from texts, from spam texts. Yeah, I should totally say this while we're recording. I don't get a whole lot of spam texts. That's probably going to change now.
Yeah, I don't either.
All right. But cross your fingers.
Yeah, and the robocalls come in waves. I'm in a lower wave right now. I'm sure that's going to change while we're recording. like it did last time Andrew and I complained about robocalls, and we both got them during the show. But that's... I'm glad that Apple's trying to do something. I am less glad that it seems like it has to be up to Apple to do this or Google to do this in order to try and fight some of this because we can't get it on a carrier level. To me, that's sort of the larger frustrating piece of this is that Apple's having to try stuff out to see if there's a way to make this easier for everybody since AT&T won't do it, T-Mobile won't do it, Verizon won't do it. So, like, that part's kind of a bummer, but I'm glad they're trying.
I think we go through multiple stages on these kinds of things. I think it's the first reaction is, oh, this didn't work so well. Second response is, oh, yeah, we've learned more and more about it. And third phase is, oh, yeah, we can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So and I think we're in the phase one right now.
We are. And I'm fine with that. I'm just disappointed that the party involved in my pocket communicator taking action is the company that made it and not the company who serves me the texts in the first place. So,
well, maybe there could be a silver lining in all this because SMS-based two-factor authentication isn't secure anyway.
That's true. It's not great.
People will get so annoyed by this and switch to something more secure, like a physical key, like I mentioned in our past podcasts, or something like an app dedicated to these short-time codes.
I use Authy, A-U-T-H-Y, which is an app that works much like the YubiKey, like a security key thing that you know, like that fob, that USB fob you plug into the side of your computer. And it generates a code. That code only works for 30 seconds. You have to put it in. I don't understand the magic on the back end, but I know that it works. So I know it's a thing that is keeping my stuff safe. I do have a couple of accounts that regularly somebody finds and decides that they really want to get into and make their own account. And using things like the Authy app, which is totally free, they don't want anything for it or anything, help make that a little bit harder for them, which is nice. So that's something that I've used and that I enjoy. But I would like very much if, you know, if things would evolve. But, you know, I'm also the person that still says, you know, you should stop calling it a password and start calling it a passphrase, because if you called it a phrase, maybe you'd use a few words and longer is stronger. So, you know, if we started calling all of them passphrases, then maybe people would put two or three words together instead and make things a lot more secure. So this has been the Daily Security Observations with Andrew and Kelly. John, I don't know how many text messages you get to securely authenticate things. Are you using an app or a key, or are you using, you know, subspace relays or what?
I don't want to go into the technical details of how I manage my security.
No, just vaguely, like Are you getting text messages like this? Is this going to be a hassle for you?
Yes, I do two-factor authentication with the banks, and that's how I get my text messages.
Okay.
So I'll be interested to see how it works out for me. I'll be testing it very soon.
Yeah. And what I'm worried about is, well, Andrew, to your point, yes, the SMS thing isn't the most secure way to do anything. For a lot of places, it's all there is. So, yeah, you know, there's not
point.
Yeah, there's not necessarily an option to set up something like an Authy or a YubiKey to make sure that your banking stuff is all 100% secure. I mean, I still know that there are banks out there where in order to access all of your financial data, there's a maximum character limit on the number of characters in your password. Right. Like it can only be 8 to 12 or like maximum of 12. And you can't have anything weird in it, like punctuation, you know, and that's just really frustrating. You know, that. So think about that next time you're logging into stuff and, you know, reviewing your password manager and seeing if it's time to change a password or two here and there once in a while. Those are some things that you know, that's a place where it's really important to vote with your dollars because it's all your dollars. Like every dollar you have in the bank is only protected by don't put a comma in your password. That doesn't seem like a good decision. Mm-hmm. So thing to think about. Another thing to think about while we're talking about your financial data is credit card balances. Sometimes as we get into crazy spending season, or as some people call it, OMG, the Mac Pro was released yesterday. We are in crazy credit card spending season. And so one of the things that you can do to help get on top of that is get a credit card consolidation loan. And you can get one of those from a company called Lightstream, who's our sponsor today. You can get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay, which is way lower than the average interest rate of over 20% APR. You can get a loan from $5,000 up to $100,000. There are no application fees, origination fees, transaction fees, and there's not even a prepayment penalty. So you can get out ahead of it even faster. You can apply right from your phone, and you might even get your money the same day you applied. Here's the disclaimer. You need this part from the top. Just for my listeners, if you apply now, you can get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this is to go to lightstream.com/TDO. It's lightstream.com/TDO. You can get an additional discount just for being a listener to my show. lightstream.com/TDO. Disclaimers, as always, subject to credit approval. Rate includes a 0.5% autopay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/TDO for more information. We'd like to thank Lightstream for sponsoring the show today. Now, John, again, sort of a financial show today. We're going to talk a little bit about, well, we talked yesterday a little bit about your future finances and what's going to happen when the current Mac Pro comes to the end of its life and has to go live on a farm upstate.
Yeah.
So let's talk today about that computer, the one that you have now.
Yeah, I wrote the story last night about my life and times with a 2013 Mac Pro. You know, there's a lot of discussion, has been a lot of discussion about the Mac Pro, its design, its suitability for IT pros, its expandability, its thermal corner that it was backed into, its lack of expandability. It's not exactly a cheese grater class device that people have come to love. And it's taken a lot of heat.
Now, let's talk for a minute, just for people playing along at home. We're talking about the circular black Mac
cylinder.
Pro. Yeah.
Yeah, I call it a black, beautiful duckling instead of an ugly duckling. It turns out that for certain uses, in my case as a writer, it was a perfect computer. Mm-hmm. I'd gone through a phase with iMacs and decided I needed a bigger display, and a 27-inch iMac with a 27-inch display next to it is a little awkward. And I've come to be fond of the Hewlett-Packard's. I have a 34-inch Hewlett-Packard C34Z. So I told the story of deciding to buy a Mac Pro back when it was this thing to have, and I bought a low-end one. I got a discount. And it turns out to have been a really good choice for me as a writer, because I've kind of fell into the Mac mode of having a small, powerful Mac on the desktop instead of underneath where I kick it with my feet. Mm-hmm. And a big screen in front of it. And this Mac Pro has plenty of ports. It has 4 USB 3 ports, and it has multiple Thunderbolt ports, Thunderbolt 2. And it just sits there and runs, and it hums, and it's fast, and it's powerful, and it's capable, and it's just not necessarily a server-class machine, but because it's a pro-class machine, it's sturdy, and it's well-cooled for the uses I put it through.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told the story of that, and then I also went and told the story on how I decided to buy that Hewlett-Packard display.
Yes.
And then all heck broke loose in 2014 when Yosemite shipped. And Yosemite really messed with this Mac Pro's graphics system. Something went very wrong with the graphics driver.
Oh, and no.
I said that several times a day. What I meant to write was maybe six times a day. The screen would just lock up, and usually in the middle of writing an article. And it would just, the machine would freeze, and there was a special technique you had to go through to unfreeze it, and hopefully your work got saved. And this went on from Yosemite to El Capitan, 2 years, basically. And I wrote a blistering article called 2013 Mac Pro Freezes Continue. Owners have little recourse. Apple is helpless. And there were thousands of messages on a message board about owners having a problem with this Mac Pro in Yosemite. And Apple did an upgrade program for the high-end AMD Fire Pros, but never for the D300. Magically, when Sierra came out, things got a lot better. And when High Sierra shipped, problems disappeared completely. So I went through a short period of time where I was having difficulties with this machine, but now, since High Sierra and through Mojave, I've had a solid experience with it. It's fast, it's cool, running, it has plenty of ports. It doesn't take up a lot of room under my desk. It just sits behind the display. And so you don't see all the cables and cords running into it. People have talked about how once you attach all the cables, it gets ugly. Who cares? You don't look at it anyway. All you care about is how fast it is, how reliable it is, and how easy it is to use, and how it drives a big display. I think it can still drive two 4K displays. It has a metal capable graphics card. So I've had a lot of fun with this Mac Pro, and it has taken a lot of heat in some circles. But in contrast, in my story, in my case, it turns out to be the perfect writer's tool.
Mm-hmm.
And so what am I going to do when it doesn't run macOS anymore? When I surmise that it may run out of gas with macOS 10.16, the next version beyond Catalina, a reader wrote in and thought maybe it could last longer than that. So mm-hmm. What would I buy if I had to replace it? I guess I would be forced into buying a loaded Mac Mini, as we talked about on Monday. But my fantasy is, and Apple will never do this, but it would be really cool if there were a 2020 model of the black cylinder with upgraded GPUs, upgraded CPUs, Thunderbolt 3, same form factor, same price for a low-end Mac Pro. One that we could afford, a Mac Pro for the rest of us, because by golly, all those people who went out and bought a Mac Pro in 2013 for $3,000 are still using it probably, are not going to be able to afford a $6,000 or $7,000 or a $20,000 2019 Mac Pro. I mean, that's a whole different class of computer. Mm-hmm. So there's a quantum jump there between through to the 2013 Mac Pro and the 2019 Mac Pro, and the only headless solution in the middle is a Mac Mini.
Now
Dave Hamilton points out that the Mac Mini is pretty fast with an i7.
Yeah, the Mac Mini is a really capable computer.
If you load it up with an i7 with sufficient RAM in it, it's a formidable computer. Twice as fast as my 2013 Mac Pro, which at a basic quad-core level. So,
yeah.
But I wouldn't also be upset after 6 years having a computer that's twice as fast.
Mm-hmm. No.
But still, it just isn't as cool. Mac Mini isn't as cool as the black cylinder.
Well, it's not, to be fair. It's not.
And I don't think it has quite as many ports.
It has, well, I don't remember how many the Mac Pro has, but it has a lot of ports. The thing that I wonder about is the evolution of the lineup between these two things. So when I look at where we were when your computer came out 6 years ago, what I think about is how there was an iMac then, but it sort of felt like the MacBook Air of the desktop line. Like, if you need something, it doesn't really matter what monitor you have, and you can, and you know, but you want it to live on your desk, you just got an iMac. It was fine, right? It was a fine machine. But they've taken the iMac a lot more seriously since then. And you have a 5K iMac, and you have the iMac Pro, and you know, you can get a nice big monitor, or you can get something a little smaller. And you know, it used to be that the mini was your only option. Like, what did Steve call that? Prosumer. There was like this middle tier of customer that needed more than the basics, but didn't need a tower. And that was kind of also who the mini was supposed to help, because it's not like you could give that person an iMac, right? And that's not the case anymore, because even a 2-year-old iMac is still a really capable machine. And again, to come back to technological honesty, which I talk to people about here all the time, if you really think about what you actually need your computer to actually do, you know, I do agree with Brian's point, which he has made here on TD. I think it's going to be his next tattoo. I will not pay 2019 money for 2017 tech. But for a lot of people, one of those iMacs is a fabulous machine, and it's way more horsepower than a lot of people need for whatever it is they're trying to do, if they're doing lightweight computer stuff. Even if you get into a little bit more, you know, heavy lifting with it, it's still going to be a really, really capable computer. So I think that's part of where the evolution is. Like, if you're somebody that needs more than what the entry level machine of any of these can give you, but maybe, you know, the Mac Pro, the current Mac Pro, as of yesterday morning, is overkill. Like, you do have an option in the middle, and you didn't used to. And I feel like that's part of it.
That Apple came out with a refreshed 2018 Mac Mini. Mm-hmm. They really needed to do that, and I'm so happy they did.
Yeah. And I think, because I do think you have two good options now, where before there was really only one, you know. You have two good options if you need, if you want something, if you need a new desktop machine that is not the Mac Pro. Yeah, I can't even imagine what, you know, you get one of those under your desk and you scuff it because you swing your feet like me because your feet don't touch the ground, and it sits under your desk and you accidentally kick it. I can't even imagine. Yeah. So I'm interested, because I really, like, it was really surprising to me when you were having graphics trouble with High Sierra. I will tell you that.
No, Yosemite. Oh,
with Yosemite. Right. Wrong one. Because, like, it was one of those things where, like, didn't you think that you were going to have to install this, that somebody was going to install this on a Mac Pro? And that, you know, that it turned out to be as widespread as it was really surprising to me.
I think there was a administrative or political disconnect between Apple and AMD that was going on at the time.
Oh, that would make sense.
And a little bit of finger pointing about who was responsible for fixing the graphics issue.
Yeah. Now, Andrew, you're like me, you're team laptop, right?
Yep, I have a MacBook Pro.
You have a MacBook Pro, okay. And what year is yours?
I think it's 2014.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I thought yours and mine were close.
With plenty of ports.
Yeah, I have an early 15. Yeah. or as I like to call it, a mere mortal MagSafe MacBook Pro. I love MagSafe. And I really like that I have a bunch of ports for whatever I want. The thing that makes me really resistant to the USB-C, honestly, is MagSafe. Just given the number of times that MagSafe has saved me from having to buy a new computer or get the power jack replaced because my power cord just pops off instead of, you know, trying to rip the inside of the computer out or fling my computer onto the floor. It's probably, since they instituted MagSafe as a thing that you could use to charge your computer, it's probably saved me hundreds of thousands of dollars in repairs. So I'm really, really resistant to give it up, but also I'm not really seeing deficiency in what I've got right now. And, you know, this is always part of the value prop of getting a MacBook, you know, is or any Apple, you know, computer, whether it's a desktop machine or a laptop machine, is you can use it. Like, Andrew's is 5 years old, coming up on six. Mine's coming up on five. And I have no complaints about the speed or responsiveness of the basic stuff that I do. Occasionally, when I need to export an audio file or a video file that I've been doing some editing on, when I do that, it takes a little longer on my computer than it might, say, on even John's current machine, let alone John's future machine. But by and large, everything I'm doing is like at speed. So I don't really have any complaints about it. Are you kind of in the same place, Andrew?
Yeah. For me, I noticed speed issues less, and also note that sometimes I can tell if it's having trouble because, for example, on our morning meetings over Hangouts, sometimes after a while, the fan will start going a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, mine will start. Mine does spin up what I like to think is needlessly once in a while.
That's why I gave up on a MacBook Pro as my daily driver.
With the fan?
I started using a MacBook Pro with dual core, two duos, and they were anemic and terrible.
Oh.
But even with the iSeries core, I found that a MacBook Pro just didn't have the oomph that I needed, even if it was a quad core.
Sure.
So for sitting down at your desk and working daily, I found that a Mac Pro class machine just really has all the power, and the fan never comes on, and it's never in a bind or restricted or cutouts or, you know, things slow down. I never notice any issues. It's one of the nice things. That's a joy for as a writer to be able to do all sorts of stuff and have Parallels desktop running and have this running and have Discord running and Skype running and Slack running and several browsers and Twitter and mail all running at the same time and never having any problems at all.
I would like to point out for those playing along at home that all of those apps that John just rattled off, he has that monitor that you measure in acres because none of those windows are touching. They don't overlap.
There's a picture in my article about the non-overlapping windows.
Yeah, it's one flat layer of windows. There's nothing behind anything else.
To an alternate desktop, the Mac Pro has the oomph to switch to a second desktop in under a second.
Oh, I do that too.
It's just frictionless.
It's great. I don't use it as much as I should, I admit. But I do switch between desktops and it does work pretty well. That's going to do it for us today. John, I'm excited to talk to you about the Mini when it's time for that. But in the meantime, thank you for being here today.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
And Andrew, thanks for coming by to talk to us about iOS updates. These are things that are important. You should still update. I'm going to point that out. You should still update. There's other stuff that's in it that's really good that you need, like security features. But yeah, thanks for coming by. And suddenly Andrew's muted, so I'm going to say I'm under the impression that he's happy to be here and would like to talk to would be happy to come back and talk to us about more security in the future. So, bye, Andrew. It was nice to have you here today before your audio fell completely over. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.